welcome to a new episode of Chevrons, a podcast for the enlisted force by the enlisted force. My name is Airman First Class Julia Ahasi from the 102nd Intelligence Wing, and I'll be your host today as we speak about work and happiness with our very own chaplain, Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Yee. Hello, Chaplain Yee. Welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here. Honored to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to welcome you back for your second appearance on Chevrons. In a previous episode, we talked about emotional intelligence, the definition, and how EI and EQ can affect your work and your relationships, both professionally and in your personal life.
Right.
This time around, we're going to talk about work and happiness. We asked the question, are you satisfied with your job? And we encourage all our listeners to self-reflect during this conversation and ask yourself these questions, too. Now, Chaplain Yee, when we speak about job satisfaction, where does this come from?
You mean this, like, the idea of job satisfaction? Yeah, I mean, it comes from a lot of the surveys, you know, these huge surveys that Gallup does. There's another huge survey called the General General Studies Survey, mm-hmm. which kind of just, again, surveys America and the populations and looks at different demographics and sees, hey, you know, where are people coming from? What's their background? And one of the big things is, are they happy in life, but also happy in their work? What kind of work they do? Things like that. And so we, from this data, glean kind of what's going on in people's lives and what are the trends we're seeing. And then from there, what can we analyze and what can we hopefully make some changes, whether policy or programming, to help people be happier, you know, and more satisfied in their work.
So where do you think that most people think that job satisfaction comes from? And is it, do you think that it's kind of aligned with where it really comes from?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think that's one of the fascinating things about researching this topic, you know, because as a chaplain, I want to help, obviously, people's religious and spiritual growth and their beliefs. And a part of spirituality is happiness, you know. What makes us happy? Why are we happy? What is happiness, you know? And I think, as you said earlier, like, we don't really reflect a lot on this question. And so looking at, you know, happiness, obviously one area of that's important is where we work. That's where we spend most of our life in, you know. Most of our entire life is around work, right?
Right.
And most of the time, people would say what gives them job satisfaction or what they're told gives us more job satisfaction is usually how much money you make, you know, or what position you have. Now, that's a very common thing for, I guess, not just American culture, but especially in most cultures, right? Especially cultures that grew up poor and didn't have a lot. Compensation and or status are huge things that give you value. But what we found looking at these studies from Gallup especially is that those are not the things that actually give us job satisfaction, actually. You know, the things that truly give us job satisfaction. And if you ask most people, I think if you really ask them, like, they thought about what really give them job satisfaction at their job. Like, if you ask them, hey, like, when was the time you really loved your job, you know? I'm sure money and position was a part of it. But when you think about it more in depth, longer lasting than a month, for example, because again, we get happy from pay bumps, we get happy from rank promotions,
right.
But that doesn't last, you know. The things that we found in these studies that gives us real job satisfaction is about purpose, you know, why, not less about what we do, you know, because we all have our dream jobs, you know. I don't know, did you have a dream job growing up?
I did. I wanted to be on Broadway.
Hey,
I
love that. Really?
That's
so cool.
So
you have to sing for us sometime.
Definitely,
you know?
Shifted. I still love theater, but yeah, that was my dream as a kid.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I love that. And, you know, for me, I was told that I had to be a doctor, you know, so I was like, my dream job is to be a doctor. And
right.
Again, the irony is my brothers and I were all told to be doctors as children, sons. I have two younger brothers of Korean immigrants, South Korean immigrants. But we're told, again, that what we do is the most important thing, you know? So I was told, like, work hard, study hard, so you can be a doctor. And but we find in the studies is that it's not about what you do, but it's more about why you do it, actually. Why you do it, and more importantly, what are your values, which requires lots of reflection, lots of spiritual reflection,
mm-hmm.
and also what are the values and the mission of the organization you work for, right? And do they match? So it's more about the why rather than the what. You know, because again, what's important? I'm not going to say it's not important, you know, but we spend more time on the what. You know, I mean, there's huge books you can read, classes you can take, okay, about finding your perfect job. And that's important. But then we don't think about, again, the why, the spiritual reasons. Again, I would like to consider about why who you are, both why and who are you, and why and who is this organization that you're going to give your time, your sweat, maybe your blood, you know, metaphorically, hopefully, right. That you're going to do. And so those are the things that have really surprised a lot of people, in some ways surprised and not surprised, you know, so.
Yeah, I think I agree. A lot of people focus less on their why and their purpose in the workforce. I know that growing up, I was always told, if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life. And they tell me, find a job that you're excited to go to work every day.
Right.
And that's easier said than done, right? When you start thinking about the what's of what can I get from this? How much money will I make from this? Is it what I'm passionate about?
Right.
And I appreciate your idea of reframing your thinking of defining who you are and how your values align with the work that you do and finding out why you're really there and what your purpose is.
Yeah. And I love what you said earlier about the passion part, right? That's a big thing that, I mean, I guess young people, but I think everyone wants to feel, we're told like not just compensation is a big deal, but you want to feel passion. Like you said, you want to feel like you love going to work every day.
Right.
And, you know, I love what I do as a chaplain, you know, as a pastor for many years, but did I love it every day? Definitely not, you know? And the interesting thing about the word passion that I learned a few years ago was that passion actually comes from the Latin word passeo, which leads to the word patience, actually. Mm-hmm. So when you say passion, often we think of like this emotional, like uplifting thing that will sustain you forever, kind of like first love type of thing.
Sure.
But really passion means what are you willing to suffer for, actually?
Right.
You know, that's what the root word actually means. Not what you're that feels good all the time, but passion means what are you willing to do that you're willing to suffer for, actually.
Right.
You know? So that's another reframe to consider, right?
Like
so.
Find what you would die for and then live for it.
Right.
Finding what you're passionate about.
That's
and
right.
It's kind of funny because when I was a child, I always, like I said, wanted to be on Broadway. I wanted to be a theater kid because I was most passionate about theater. I spent all my free time doing it, just show choir and musicals. And I know
I, love that.
I was a theater dork. But then I went to college for theater. My first semester, I went for theater and I realized that passion is not enough. It wasn't as rewarding.
Right.
The lifestyle didn't align with my values and kind of just the time frame of like the sacrifices I had to make to be in theater wasn't worth it for me in the end. So I'll never really wonder what if, you know, because I weighed out what am I willing to sacrifice? What do I want in life outside of work? And then kind of figure out a job that is rewarding.
Right.
And then I'm also passionate about. And I found this. I didn't even think that this job, public affairs or public relations, was, and journalism was even an option for me. I didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting how people are just chasing their passion and trying to find something that, a job that aligns with the thing they love to do, like a professional baseball player. A lot of people, that's their dream when they're a kid, or to be on Broadway, to be a movie star, or to be an astronaut, but model. But then they think of what are they willing to sacrifice and where their values lie, and who they are and why they're doing it. And I think that would give some clarity of how to find joy where you are.
Yeah. No, I love that you said that. You know, my father, you know, he grew up very poor in South Korea, and so he came to America to live the American dream, and so he was all about, his life philosophy was work hard and you'll be successful, you know, which in general is true, in general. And so again, my dad really was kind of being successful, and he sent his kids to the best schools, and so my brothers and I, you know, we came to believe like life is about success, and we want to be successful for our dad, but also for ourselves and our families.
Sure.
But it's funny, like my brothers and I, you know, none of us became doctors, you know. My two younger brothers both got in med school. My middle brother actually was at med school at Brown Medical School, and he quit his second year, you know, and because I think, you know, college for my brothers and I were time to start thinking about what are our values, you know, what do we value? And, you know, we loved our dad, you know, he passed a few years ago, but, you know, we realized, each of us separately, that we didn't want to live the way he did, you know, which is, you know, we admire him, but he worked all the time, you know, like when we started being more successful business-wise, like less time on family vacations. And, you know, as you were talking about what you're willing to sacrifice, like, I think my brothers and I, we all kind of came to just work really, you know, good, but just steady jobs, you know, like we're not looking to be millionaires right now. I mean, we've been there, my family, you know, but like we realized like that's, and I know that's kind of a place of privilege, but like we just realized like time with family, time, like for me, you know, like I want to have time for my wife, you know, and my little dog. And those are values that are important to me. And so that's a conflict if I was, you know, I was always, sometimes I think, you know, when I was younger, like, oh, maybe if I was a dentist instead, or if I did consulting or iBanking where you make a lot of money, you know? But I realized, like, man, like, okay, I could work 100 hours a week, maybe make 500 grand to a million, maybe, but like, man, like barely any time for my family. Like, that's just not who I want to be, you know?
Right.
And I was just listening to a podcast, interestingly, recently about this guy who interviewed a bunch of billionaires. And the biggest regret of these billionaires is like, they don't have time for their family, you know? That's their
right.
biggest regret. And you can't buy that back, right? So again, I think what you said is right on about values and taking that time. Like, what am I willing to live for and, I guess, suffer for and die for, you know? Like, that's... sometimes it's a harder question, you know, that
right.
people don't want to deal with, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think about what my values were and what I wanted to do and what I defined as success 5 years ago. And even last year I wanted to move to New York City and
yes.
I wanted to work in public relations. So I did it. And I did it and I liked it. But then I tried to think about what brought me the most joy, what was the most rewarding work. For me, it wasn't that work in New York. That wasn't rewarding for me as this job is that I have now. Or it didn't align with a lot of my values. And and I think that a big mistake I've made is I chase this idea of success that I have instead of chasing happiness, right? So I think to be successful is to live in New York City, have a big corporate job, and then I'll be happy, I'll be successful, and everyone will think I'm really cool. But then I think about, I was losing some time with my family, and I value family more than anything else I've learned. And and I like being near my family and being home. I like doing work that's rewarding and helps other people, and I like to tell people stories. That's what I get to do with my job, and I like
that.
To work with other people. I didn't really get to do that. So, so not that one is right or wrong, but I think that I've try to give myself some grace as I'm starting to define who I am and learning what I do value and trying to find places where I fit that aligns with those values.
Yeah. No, I love that. It's, you know, I love that you sharing your journey. And, you know, I think it's so interesting because as you were talking, you know, I was thinking about my time as a chaplain at Harvard Business School, working with people who had that same mindset, you know, like, you know, about success, you know, going to New York, you know, and, you know, doing amazing things, you know, but at the same time wondering, like, fortunately, thankfully, you realize it sooner, but some people realize later, and for some too late, like, and some, you know, who get stuck in a certain lifestyle, just like, oh, like, what am I doing this for? But there's certain, use that lifestyle. And yeah, there was a interesting article. I was listening to this professor named Arthur Brooks, and he was talking about when he asked high achieving people, you know, like you know, would you rather be happy or successful? You know, most people shockingly still pick success, you know, and even though they're not happy. So, and part of that, I think, again, is just, you know, I'm a big fan and become more of a person thinking about culture. You know, culture is like not just around the people we surround ourselves with, but the environment. And if the environment you're around with is like a, let's say, a New York fast paced, like, you know, ultra successful and, you know, kind of culture, then you kind of get, the culture forms us, you know? And so that's one of the, and if that's your choice, that's fine, but culture forms us, you know?
And some people love that culture and some people thrive in it. I had friends in New York who their job in New York aligned with their values and they were so happy there and that's where they belonged. I thought that was me. And I thought that I defined success as making good money and having a great job and working in the arts and culture industry in New York City. That excited me so much. I thought it was amazing. I tried it out and I realized that I value family. I value travel, and I can only travel if I can afford to travel. So, so New York comes with its sacrifices. So I tried to find where I was happiest. And some people are happiest in New York City. Some people are happiest active duty military. Some people are happiest in certain in certain jobs. And, and I think that it's important to give yourself grace while you're figuring that out. But also. Taking the time to kind of self-reflect and say, why am I doing this? And I thought about, why am I in New York? And my answer wasn't because I love it here.
Right.
It was because this is what I think I need to do right now.
Yeah.
So it kind of gave me some clarity there.
Yeah, no, I love that.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right. And yeah, I think, you know, you're one of the things that came out of the study, the surveys, you know, is that, you know, in terms of happiness, more people are satisfaction. More people are satisfied by their job than not, you know? And most of us, you know, believe, if you ask people, do most people hate their job or dislike their job versus like their job? Most people dislike it, you know, you would say.
Sure.
But the studies show, like, oh, no, most people are fine and content, and more people are completely satisfied, you know, than we think.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just think it's so fascinating that I think one of the reasons why people think they should feel unsatisfied, you know, with their job is whether social media balloons it up or culture or families tell us, like, oh, you should find something that you need to do more of this, more of that, you know. And I think that's one of the fascinating things about this, you know, as we talk about job satisfaction, about happiness at work, is like having a gut check, kind of like what you're sharing about your gut check, about not just about what your values are, but like, is this my values, or is this like someone else's values kind of telling me what I should think, you know?
Right.
'Cause that's one of the fascinating things. I think one of the biggest things taken from these studies is that people are actually satisfied in their jobs, you know? Like, is it their dream job? No. Is it their job that, again, every morning, I mean, I don't think that's possible. Every morning, you're like, ah, I love my job,
yeah,
you know?
I can't see that.
Yeah, but yeah, most people are satisfied. But I think a lot of that, again, comes from thinking about their values, you know, and about who they are. And again, just checking, like, hey, like, everyone else is saying maybe you need a better job, a higher paying job, or whatever. But, like, is that really reality, you know?
Right.
And I think that's a good thing to reflect upon as well, you know? Is that true, you know? Is that what you really think, or is that someone else is telling you to think that way, you know? So.
And I think that if we were to ask the average person that we work with or that we see, are you happy? They'll be like, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah, right.
But if we wanted to kind of dive into this idea of happiness and define contentment. I know that you kind of talked about the equation of happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to kind of define what happiness is and where that comes from?
Right. Yeah. I mean, this comes from a lot of the synthesis and research of Professor Arthur Brooks at Harvard Business School and Harvard Kennedy School. Very cool guy that I met while I was a chaplain there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of adjusted the equation a little bit, but the equation from one of his articles in Atlantic was that when you look at happiness overall, a lot of it's actually outside of our control. It comes from these three big buckets.
Mm-hmm.
One is genetics, actually. And that's about half of our happiness, actually, you know, which, you know, again, we're told that happiness is in our control. And on one hand, as I'll explain later, that's true. But most of it actually is out of our control. And one big part of that is our genetics, you know. If you think about personality, our ability to be happier than others, we know that. There are people who are kind of more positive and others who are more, I guess, pessimists or realists, you know. I'm more of an optimist. My wife's more of a pessimist or a poo-pooer, I like to say. But genetics is a huge part of it, you know. And sometimes we forget that our bodies, our personalities, our happiness levels are a genetic component, you know, a huge genetic component, you know, and some people don't like that, you know, but I always tell in my presentations that one of the good things to take away from that fact is that all your happiness and unhappiness is not just based on your own choices, actually, you know, because a lot of us think the reason I'm happy is because I made bad choices, and okay, maybe there's some truth to that, but there's also another huge part, which is your genetics, actually. Influences your happiness. And so that's 50%. And 25% is based on circumstances. Like, hey, like, you won the lottery. Hey, that's great. Or someone you love broke up with you. It's like, oh, that sucks. Like, those are, so again, things out of your control, but they affect our happiness. But one of the things that comes out of the study of happiness is that those things go up or low only for a little bit, you know, maybe longer for some, you know, if you lost someone, you know, a grandfather or something, like, that's gonna make you sad for a while. But eventually you go back to your genetic, what we call the set point, you know, the set point of happiness that we're always at. And if something great happens, like you get a promotion, yay, I'm happy, but that doesn't last, you know? It always goes back to your normal set point, you know? And so our set points are influenced by our genetics. So genetics is half, 25% circumstances, and the last fourth is that what we can control, our habits, actually. And those lead to the second equation, which the habits are composed of these four things. They are our relationship with our family, mm-hmm. gives us happiness, our friendships, our worldview, actually. So what we believe, actually, about the world. That really affects our happiness, and we can control that.
Right.
And the last one is what we talked about earlier, which is about our work, you know? Is our work have two components, which is it meaningful work? Is it give us, is it like help us feel like we're serving others, have a service component to it? And is there a reward portion to it, you know, the feeling of accomplishment.
Right.
So those four parts are what we can focus on in terms of what we control, you know? And so, yeah, that's kind of the basic equation that Arthur Brooks lays out, which I present a lot on, because it's important, you know, because we're usually told that our happiness is based on all of our own choices, which is a heavy burden, if you think about it. Right. And it's based around these other four things, which even back in ancient times, they were being told this is what makes you happy, which was more money, more power, more fame, and more pleasure. And so if you do those four things, we're told those are the things that give us happiness. But that's not in reality from what the studies and science has shown, actually. And so, yeah.
So while your happiness is not all in your control,
right.
I think that people should give themselves grace again because they should recognize that. But we can control how we react to circumstances, and then we can control our habits and kind of our relationships and our relationship with work and all those things. So let's talk kind of about work-life balance, I guess, and talk about how we balance those relationships with family and our friendships, and then also our happiness at work and our relationship with our employees as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think when we think about family, right, that's, you know, when I was a chaplain at a hospital, you know, at Brigham and Women's in Boston, and I was, you know, I learned from some experienced chaplains there that there are two questions that people ask when they're about to die, you know, and I just had no idea, you know, Brigham and Women's is right next to Dana-Farber.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, he got sick, but I didn't realize how many people had cancer, how many people passed away. And it was eye-opening for me. I just haven't dealt with that a lot in my life, to be honest, in terms of people that I know who passed. And so being there, you know, they were saying, hey, like, there are two questions that people ask when they're about to pass, you know? And these two questions are, first, did I live a life of integrity? Meaning, did I live according to my values, you know, my vision of how I want to live my life, you know? And so you start thinking about, did I live a life of integrity in the sense of, you know, wholeness rather than just honesty, but did I live the way that I said I wanted to live my life? And the second question they ask is about, and so it goes to worldview, you know, we talked about, right. Well, I'll talk about that a little bit more, but, you know, what your worldview is, like how you view the world. Why do you exist? What is your purpose? Why is there good? Where is there evil? Where does this person go once they pass? These are deep questions that we don't usually want to deal with. They're too heavy a lot of times. And then the second question that people ask when they're about to pass is, did I love well? Did I love specifically my family well, you know? Yeah. And, you know, that's a tough one, you know, because family's hard, you know? Family is a source of love, but also can be a source of pain, you know? And there's people that we know who have awesome stories, but also mixed in with some stories of trauma, you know? And obviously we know some people who've had mostly a traumatic life because of their family. Mm-hmm. And so when we have, you know, and, you know, there's been a loss of family structure in society, you know, in general, you know, less people are getting married, less people are having kids, you know, all these things. But yeah, I mean, people a lot of times don't have a family anymore. They don't know how to, if they do have family, they don't want to do anything with their family. So, I mean, this is tied into a larger cultural problem of us feeling more and more lonely as a society, you know. There was a question, a survey done, that asked people, you know, how many people can you truly depend on, you know? And the most common answer, so not the average, so the most common answer was zero, actually, now. And that's crazy, you know, hopefully, and sad, you know? And I think that's just a testimony to, again, our society. You know, even Barack Obama, Surgeon General, said the biggest epidemic in America isn't, you know, cancer or whatever or disease, it's actually loneliness, you know, because we know loneliness, not just a mental state, it affects your spirituality, your body, your emotions, everything. And so going to family, right, I mean, more and more people don't have family. People who do have family don't want anything to do with their families, and that's why I think counseling is important. But you know, a lot of people don't want to still do that type of help, you know. And so, family is a huge part of it. You know, you can try to run away from your family, but you're still part of the family. You know, all the trauma you went through. I believe in this phrase. It says, either pain or trauma is transformed, or it's just transferred. You know, and if you don't transform it, you know, and you don't want to do, you know, I see a lot of families or people who, for example, get married, you know, and they're just like, I don't want to deal with my family anymore. They're, you know, the terrible people, but they don't deal with it. So they pass on some of these behaviors or beliefs that they promise themselves they never do, but they just, without dealing with counseling or someone who loves them to process all that, they just pass it to their children, you know? Right. And so family is a huge deal, you know, part of our happiness. And you were talking about that earlier, you know? I think that's a gift and hard, because I think more and more families don't, more and more people don't have families, you know? And that ties in with the other kind of piece, which is friendship. You know, I would say out of those four things, friendship, family, worldview, and meaningful work, my weakest area is friendships. You know, I was the guy who wanted to just get married, you know, and right. once I got married, I just like kind of forgot all my guy friends. And then I realized even when I was married, happily married, and having a meaningful job and having a good relationship with my family, my brothers, my mom, that I still felt unhappy, you know. And one of the reasons I realized, I thought it's because I needed a better job, you know, I needed more right. money, more status, because that's what I was told by my dad
right
and society. And I realized from this equation that, man, my friendships kind of stink, you know. I'm in my 40s and it's hard making friends, you know, especially because most of my friends now have kids, you know, when my wife and I don't have kids, and it's just more of a challenge. And then you're a guy and it gets harder to make friendships when you get older, especially for men. And so, yeah, I just realized that's where I should be putting my effort and energy, is with friendships, you know, and because, you know, some people really are, for example, are told, you know, get married because you'll be less lonely. And there's some truth to that. Right. But there's also a lot of lies to that, because, you know, I always tell people, like, marriage doesn't fix loneliness. You know, it helps with a loneliness. But the most lonely I've ever felt, and you and anyone will ever feel, is lying next to a person that you married and wondering, like, who did I marry and who is this person? And that will happen to every single person who gets married. It doesn't matter who, because you marry a flawed person, just as my wife married a flawed person as well. So friendships are so powerful and important, you know, and I think that's, there's kind of a renaissance, I think, right now, people realizing how important friendships are. But the problem is, as I mentioned earlier, is that we're more and more lonely, you know, like less people are not just getting married, but less people are dating, less people are having sex, you know, it's a fact out there. Less people are also having friendships, you know, real meaningful friendships, you know, and it's making us overall a less unhappy or more unhappy society, country, you know?
Yeah, I find it hard to make friendships now. And and right out of, I think that I had the biggest friend group in high school, and then I had a friend group in college. And now that I'm out of college for a couple of years, it's very hard to make friends out here, because everyone kind of went their own way and everyone's doing their own thing right now and taking their own path and have different relationships and move to different parts of the country and have different jobs, different work schedules. Some people are getting married and having kids right now, and then other people are living in New York single, and then it's hard to meet people today, and it's hard to maintain friendships when you don't see them every day the way that you used to.
At least
I have that experience for me. So I think that a lot of people are realizing that friendships are so important now.
Right.
But I think it's harder now for me than ever to make friendships, as I'm kind of being an adult now, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think it gets more challenging even when you get older. That's why, you know, I also love listening to personal finance podcasts. And there's this there's interesting research where a lot of people who retire early, you know, they financially make it, they retire early.
Yeah.
They find in usually a year or so, like, especially men, but again, both men and women, they feel extremely lonely because they retired early and they don't have to work, but all their friends work. And so that's one of the reasons I'm realizing, like, one of the reasons to keep working isn't for money. It's actually to keep friendships, because they provide a structure, a location to start building friendships, you know. That's one of the reasons I love working here, you know, because I'm building friendships here. You know, it's really hard to do on your own. Even my, I love my sister-in-law, my brother, I admire her a lot. She started realizing she needed friends. So I guess there's now apps out there to make friends. You know, in the past, I think I would have been a jerk and been like, oh, that's ridiculous. But I'm realizing, like, wow, friendships are hard to make for everyone. And hearing from you, it's like, oh, this proves the point.
Yeah.
And so they're going on a trip with some friends they met online, another couple, you know. And I'm like, you know what? I admire that. Like, because she realized there was a loss there and she did something about it instead of just, like, ignoring it or whining about it or being sad about it. She actually was proactive, you know? So I don't know. I think it's a powerful thing, and but it's getting harder and harder, like you mentioned. So
it's harder, yeah. It's harder to meet people, and I think friendship breakups are a real thing too. Ooh. Sometimes you lose friends, and some of that hurts more than losing a relationship. But it's something that we could all kind of keep on the forefront of our mind and maybe seek out, because I think it takes effort to make a friend now instead of just waiting for it to come to you.
Yeah, no, that's right.
So you're seeking out being friends with all different kinds of people that are different from you and have different ideas than you.
Right. I think that's one of the cons of right now. Everyone's into, I mean, COVID made it more appealing, at least initially, which was the whole telecommuting idea, working from home.
Right.
And obviously people love that, especially if you have family or you have like someone you're taking care of, like a father or mother who's ailing. But the problem is that, again, it makes people more lonely, right? Because work is one of those places. Again, we always think about work and like, you know, compensation about, you know, and purpose, but friendships, man, like people have lost more connection. I mean, I remember when we started going during COVID, I was like, oh, I love this. You know, church from, you know, church from my living room in my, you know, pajamas, or, you know, work from home. But I realized after 6 months, it was just like, oh, this kind of stinks. Like, I kind of miss people, you know, even just being around people. You know, some people don't need that, right? But I think most of us, again, going to the point of about values and worldview, right? Like, why are we here? I believe one of the reasons we're here, what it means to be human beings is to be human together, right? Like,
right.
That's who we're made to be, and that's not happening right now, you know? So, yeah.
So we talked about your beliefs, your world beliefs,
right.
Family and friendship. Now we could kind of talk about work was the fourth piece,
right?
So your habits, and do you think that it matters what job you have, or do you think that you could find joy in the job that you do have? Because I think it's important to recognize that not everyone has the privilege to choose whatever job that they like. Some people have a job and they're not happy, or they're looking for a job that they can obtain. Do you think that people can find joy in the job that they have, or that it matters what job that you do have?
Yeah, I mean, I think as we look at, again, the studies and the surveys, that the number one reason people leave their job is not because of compensation or because they weren't getting accomplished or recognition for their accomplishments, but because of their supervisor, you know, their boss. You know, I can think of, for me, I've only had one terrible boss. It was actually my first chaplain, you know, and boss chaplain. And yeah, and I think that there are situations where I would say it does matter what you do in terms of what you do, because it matters, because like, for example, you know, if you're someone, again, going to the values, right? If you're someone who is very into, let's say, climate change and taking care of creation, and, you know, again, I don't want to make this I think there's a lot of nuance, but let's say you're working for a company that, you know, just wants to exploit, you know, the creation, and whether it's, I don't know, gas or something, other thing, mining, you know, again,
sure.
They're not evil in my view, but that wouldn't make sense. You'd be unhappy because that's your value, you know, or if your values is about, you know, making a lot of money, you know, and you're working at a job that doesn't do that, you know, again, I'm not here to say one's bad or good, but there's a mismatch of values, right? And that's what we started with the conversation. If your values of, you know, who you are and who you want to be don't match up where you work, then you're going to be very unhappy, right? So that's another component. So who your boss, that's why when people are looking for jobs, I actually say the number one thing is like, who are you going to work for, right? Like, I've had some people who want to join us here as chaplains or religious affairs airmen, which is what the enlisted position is called. And, you know, think when we're in New England, there's six options for them. They can go to six different bases around New England. And I always tell them, like, hey, I want you to find the right fit for you. You need to know who you might work for, you know? Like, you know, because they might be a total jerk. And that's a waste of your time. And why would you do that? So in terms of that, you know, what you do does matter, because it's around about why and who you are, you know? Because I know some of the happiest people are people who are custodians, you know, people who don't make a lot, you know, whether it's because of just their life circumstance or education level, but they've learned to reframe, again, we've talked about what their job is and like that, and how to be happy in their job, right? And so, yeah, I think going to your point, what you do does matter, right? And I think your other question was about kind of meaningful work, right? Is that right? And yeah, and I think that's, you know, we find that also what gives you satisfaction and happiness is, hey, do you feel, and this is most people, again, most people want to feel like their job is meaningful, especially in generationally, right? I would say the boomer generation, they weren't thinking about that. You know, they weren't thinking about, hey, like, I want a job that is meaningful and serves a greater purpose. You know, like, that's not, wasn't their primary purpose. Their primary purpose was like, hey, they a lot of them grew up in the 30s, you know, again, during the Great Depression and during World War One and Two, and so all the and these things where there wasn't wealth, they were thinking about, okay, I need a job just to make money so I can provide food for my family. All right, now fast forward to the current generation or the last two generations, like, they're thinking a lot more about purpose and meaning, you know. And so because they're not, they don't have to think about like, do I have enough food on the table? Most people, I would say. Right. And so yeah, I think like service, this feel of serving is really important. You know, working with some of the students at HBS, they some of them will go into something called private equity. And those guys make a lot of money. So they're in their 20s, men and women, they'll make about 500 grand, crazy amounts of money. But we're basically, to be honest, helping rich people get wealthier. Right. That's it. That's what it's right. really about. And so, you know, I was working with Christian students. And so they... So they wanted to feel they were still serving somehow, and just serving the almighty dollar wasn't enough for them. So right. for a lot of them, they realized, okay, like, they had to really think about it and find, is there a service component to this? And for them, they realized there is one place they could do it, which is they also manage a lot of funds for teacher unions and public service employees. And so for them, they were trying to, they were thinking through, hey, like, the way I serve is to help this amount of money be sustained and grow so that when people retire, teachers, police officers, that there will be money for them, you know, there will be a pension for them. And so even that component in an industry you wouldn't think serves anyone, that view is important, right? And so that goes with service. The other one is accomplishment, right? Like, hey, I did a good job. Like, hey, like, I did this project and it did really well. Did someone say, hey, you did a great job? Or did someone say, hey, here's a bonus or something, you know? That's one of the reasons I think I love being in the military, you know, because those two things are supposed to happen, right? And I don't know if your experience has been like this or you feel this, but this idea that in uniform, military members, we're here to serve one another, serve the country, serve a community that's embedded in our vision and mission, but also this a feeling of recognition, right? That's why we get rank, you know, that's why we get ribbons and medals. Like, these things are supposed to happen. That's part of our culture. That's not in every job, you know. That's why I think being part of the military is awesome, and I want more people to do it, you know. But those two components of meaningful work, again, service, feeling of service, as well as recognition of accomplishment, are crucial in feeling happy about your work. So yeah.
So I'd like to talk about on the other side too. Let's say you're a supervisor or you're a leader,
right.
and you notice that your personnel, the people, your team, are less productive, or they seem like they're not very happy in their work.
Right.
And I know that we talked about recognition and awards.
Right.
How do you suggest that supervisors show that they care about the people that work underneath them and keep them motivated and let's say it's a drill weekend, for example. I'm sure that a few people have experienced this where they're just watching the clock, ready for the day to be over because maybe they don't feel like their work is meaningful or they're not very happy or they don't recognize their purpose. What do you suggest that supervisors and leaders do to tackle that issue?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I would give two suggestions. You know, one is for the supervisor or commander or leader, whoever it might be, that if they're noticing, hey, like, there's a morale problem or like there's a productivity problem, you know, I do think it starts with themselves first, right? Like this, again, we talked about emotional intelligence in a previous episode, but one of the components of emotional intelligence is self-awareness, right? Like, what am I doing? How am I being perceived? How am I, you know, leading these men and women, and am I doing a good job or not? And the truth is, most of us can't give an accurate self-assessment. Like, that's actually impossible, you know? But I would suggest to a person who's like that, hey, when there's a productivity problem, first look at yourself, you know? Look at the person in the mirror. And that might mean doing having feedback, right? That means talking to a supervisor, talking to your peers, And if you have this courage, talking to someone that you hopefully trust and is someone who can give you healthy feedback, someone that works for you, you know? In the 102nd ISR group, we started doing something called 360 feedbacks interviews, where, for example, let's say you are a captain, maybe someday you will, or officer, or you're a senior enlisted, and it's happened. This is done regularly in the business world. It's starting to happen in the military. And so one of the things I wanted to do is make sure we do this is where we send out a survey to people, to your supervisor, to see how they view you under different areas such as leadership, communication, conflict resolution, and how they would rate you, you know. And it's all anonymous. It only goes to you, especially. It's confidential. Then we send the survey to your peers, people of the same rank, people you work alongside with who are the same level, and then this is the hardest part, we send it to people that work for you, and so they give you feedback about your leadership, and so that gives you a full 360 of how you're viewed. And it's great because it tells you about the great things you're doing, but it's also a huge gut check and sometimes really painful to get, hey, you realize, oh, like, I'm not doing a good job here, you know? And it takes a lot of courage to get that 360 done. So that's what I would tell one leader, tell a leader to do. The other part is, hey, are you just caring for your airmen, you know? Are you caring for them during the non-drills? Are you just reaching out, being like texting them or emailing them? Hey, just want to see how you're doing, you know? And that takes like, what, 10 seconds per person? But it's such a powerful thing, especially for, I think everyone, but especially for those, I think, 40 and under, you know? That's an important thing. That we've seen in the studies about work and happiness, that people feel they're cared for, you know? I always say that we can no longer, there's some people who like the Bill Belichickian idea, do your job, right? That's not most people now, you know, younger people, 40 and under, I would say. They want to know that they're cared for. This is me as well. Like, I want to know that the person I work for cares about me, you know? I don't care if we're like, you know, say, you know, helping millions of people. That's great. But for me personally, and for more people, more and more people, they want to know, hey, does this person care about me? Are they for me? And that's a big part of, I think, leadership that's required, and intentionality that people maybe aren't used to or never have done. And unfortunately, we don't really teach that either in our military culture yet. Hey, like, yeah, we say care for people, but we don't know, we don't tell people how to do that. And one of the ways, I think very simply, is just sending a text or email during non-drill, just saying, hey, like, how are things going, you know? Anything I can do to help, you know? Like, things like that, really important. So that's a couple of things I think would be really helpful. The 360 is a big one. The emailing and texting is a small one, but it really does a lot, you know?
And I think that that will result in our airmen and and all employees everywhere, that it will increase their job satisfaction, increase their happiness. I know that when I was a drill status guardsman, I would look forward to coming here during the drills because I know that my supervisors here care about me. I know that they listen to me and they consider my feedback, which I think is a big part of empowering our airmen and making sure they feel heard and that they have a purpose. And I think that all comes back to how happy you are at your job. I think that that's a big factor in it.
Yeah, no, I love that. And, you know, you remind me again that we have to be reminded, I would say supervisors have to be reminded, like, why are we here, you know? Like, because if you feel you're just part of the machine, because, I mean, some people love coming to drill, right? Some people don't, because they just feel like they're just here, do some more job, and they leave, and they're not reminded of why we're doing this, you know?
They don't have a purpose. It doesn't bring them joy or happiness.
Totally. And so, yeah, I totally agree with that. And I love that, that feedback thing you said. Like, that's crucial. I'm reading a book right now about feedback, and I feel like that's a big part of what we need to do more of here at the wing, to be honest. I don't think across the military, because right now all feedback is top down, and that's kind of helpful, but it also creates some toxicity, in my view, and unhealthy self-awareness, because you're not hearing what most people are thinking about you and viewing you, you know, that, okay, your boss thinks you're fabulous, you know, or your peers think you're fabulous, but like the people who work for, like, hate working for you, you know, like, I would want to know that, you know, and the studies have shown that the higher you go up in rank, the less self-aware you are, actually, because less people want to tell to give you that feedback. So, yeah, I love that. That's how you feel and you're getting that. Yeah, totally. And I hope more and more people invite that, you know. So, yeah.
Lastly, I kind of just want to briefly talk about burnout. I think that fatigue and burnout has a lot to do with how happy you are at your job and how satisfied you are with the work. If mental health is an issue that you're having, or that you're taking on too much work, or you're not giving yourself a break, or what do you suggest are the best tactics to help prevent burnout and kind of respond to it when you see it coming?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I definitely resonate with that question. You know, some would think, oh, okay, so I was like a pastor for 10 years and, mm-hmm. you know, meaningful work, you're caring for people. But yeah, I mean, I didn't wake up every morning, most mornings being like, ah, I love being a pastor. I mean, I loved it, you know, but what led to eventually was actually burnout, you know, sure. Like I noticed over my 10-year span of pastoring at churches that every fourth year I'd be like, I'm exhausted. I don't have any more to give. Cause I think my mentality was kind of like for my dad, like work hard as you can, but not think about sustainability, self-care, things like that. And so when I think of, when you bring up the word about burnout, I resonate with that because I know what that feels like. I know what that does. And I think the ways we remedy that come from many different angles. One of them I mentioned earlier is like, I think we burn out because we don't know why we're doing what we're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, again, vision, value, like why are we here? Why do we exist? What is your unit? Why are we doing what we're doing? Because I think it's the wrong thinking to prevent burnout is to do less work, actually, you know? I actually think that's the wrong thinking because that can lead to laziness, leads to less productivity. Because if you still don't know why you're doing what you're doing, you're working less, it's still is painful and it's like boring and you'll find another job, to be honest, you know, right. If you don't feel like you're being utilized. So I think, again, it goes down to the whys. You know, why are we here? What is the purpose? And so that's one. The other one, what I just mentioned, was about self-care, you know? Like, and I think that's a question, you know, that's one of the best things about the military, right? There's so many care agencies, you know, whether it's chaplain, DPH, mental health, there's, you know, SARC, all these components, and of course first sergeants, things like that. But you know, most places don't have that, you know, right. Which is amazing, which is, you know, that's why we're very blessed, I think, to be in the military. But the part we're talking about is, you know, self-care and what that looks like. And I think that's a big part of, you know, having, again, the reflection, the values of being like, what are my boundaries, you know, what are my limits of what I want to do and not do in general, right? There are times where we have to push beyond those limits, like, you know, let, you know, we got an inspection coming up, like, hey, like, you might have to work a little longer that week, you know? But again, hopefully the why is explained, you know, mm-hmm. Both from top down, but also to yourself. Why am I here, you know? And why am I going to be willing to do this amount of suffering, this passion, right, to do it, right? And I think that's one way we deal with burnout. And the other one is, again, is going to get help when you feel burnt out, right? Again, like we said, in the military, there's a lot of care agencies, me and others, who are just, and just people who are gifted in counseling and listening, you know, maybe even you. So I think you're probably, I think, good at listening, that someone, just someone to talk with and listen to about what you're going through. Right. Again, like I said, man, we are lonelier, getting lonelier and lonelier, you know, as a society. Again, so studies have shown that America is the loneliest country in the world, even though we're the wealthiest, quote unquote, most powerful. Mm. We have less connections than any society, more and more, you know? Yeah. And that's a concern. It's a problem. And we see in the military too. I think that's one of the reasons why suicide rates are going up, you know? Mm. That's why mental health problems are going up. We're just less connected. And so I think, again, one of the ways we deal with burnout is being more connected. But like right. you said, it takes some courage to be like, hey, would you want to get some coffee? Either person, whether you need to talk to someone or you want to see how someone's doing, like less and less of us are doing that, right. You know?
It all comes back to taking care of each other and
yeah.
and watching out for each other and even on drill weekends, checking in and then checking in when we don't have drill weekends during the week too.
So right. No, I think you're right on. You're right yeah. on.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your knowledge, sir. And thank you to our listeners for subscribing to Chevrons wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Share our show with your friends and coworkers, and we appreciate your help in spreading the word. If you'd like to suggest a topic or a guest, or would like to appear on Chevrons yourself, please drop us an email at chevrons.podcast@gmail.com and let your voice be heard. Thank you again, Chaplain Yee. I really enjoyed talking to you today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you. Mm-hmm.